Alaskans around the state protest the nomination of Judge Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, September 28th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, a Bethel man is accused of advertising big game meat for sale.
What appeared to be 1 gallon in a plastic Ziploc bags, and the ad says moose meat in ribs, $25 a bag.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Want a fulfilling volunteer opportunity educating and protecting your community? As a trained Medicare counselor, you'll help stop fraud and connect people with the benefits they've earned. You can make a powerful difference for Alaska seniors. Learn more at medicare.alaska.gov or call Alaska's Medicare Information Office at 800-478-6065. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
The fate of Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh appears more and more to depend on Senator Lisa Murkowski and a handful of other undecided senators. At the Capitol today, Murkowski and Republican colleagues Jeff Flake and Susan Collins spent hours behind closed doors in Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's office. A crowd of reporters formed around Murkowski when she left. In brief remarks, she said she supports Flake's call for an FBI investigation into sexual misconduct allegations against the nominee.
That the Senate is going to do its due diligence as it needs to do, and to have the FBI.
Her words were drowned out by Capitol Police officers corralling the reporters. Murkowski later issued a written statement saying that allowing the FBI up to a week to supplement the background report on Kavanaugh is appropriate. And across Alaska today, hundreds gathered at Senator Murkowski's satellite offices rallying against Kavanaugh's nomination. From Alaska's Energy Desk in Juneau, Rosh McChesney has this story.
Last night, Meredith Traynor was having trouble sleeping.
I was so upset about the way the Kavanaugh hearing went. I was really upset about the way the senators on the Judiciary Committee treated Christine Blasey Ford. And it felt really important to do something here in Juneau.
It was a long day of emotional testimony from Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh and the psychology professor, Christine Blasey Ford, who has accused him of sexually assaulting her. So Traynor, a Juneau resident, logged onto Facebook and created an event asking the community to meet her outside of U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski's office today. She wanted to rally in support of Blasey Ford and oppose fast-tracking Kavanaugh's nomination to the U.S. Supreme Court. Then, she says, she went to bed. By noon on Friday, people were streaming into the narrow parking lot of Murkowski's office with signs, bells, and drums. Eventually, more than 130 people showed up. Traynor says she's not surprised by the turnout.
You know, we have a senator who happens to be in a very powerful position within the current congressional leadership. And Senator Murkowski, in addition to being well-positioned to weigh in and to potentially change the direction of what happens in the future with the Supreme Court, I think her being a woman is really significant.
Right around the same time, 900 miles away, another crowd gathered at Senator Murkowski's office in Anchorage.
Kavanaugh! Kavanaugh!
There, about 150 people had a similar message.
She's the only Republican I've ever voted for, and I think she's in a very difficult position, and we are hoping and praying that she does the right thing.
That's Kim O'Brien. She feels that if Murkowski votes for Kavanaugh, it would be a betrayal.
She's a swing vote, and we want to swing her in the right direction, the direction of morality and respect for women and the American public.
There were demonstrations in other parts of the state as well. In Petersburg, a city in southeast Alaska with about 3,000 residents, a protest organized late this morning had about 25 people by noon. In Fairbanks, the Daily Newsmeter reports that about 40 people gathered outside of Murkowski's office. From Alaska's Energy Desk in Juneau, with help from Abby Collins in Anchorage, Orin Pearson in Petersburg, and the Fairbanks Daily Newsmeter, I'm Rasha McChesney.
While the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing was underway in D.C. Thursday, Senator Dan Sullivan was in the hospital having an emergency appendectomy. He issued a statement this evening to say he's well and plans to finish watching a recording of the hearing before weighing in. In an additional statement, he respected the decision of his fellow senators to push for an FBI investigation into the allegations against Kavanaugh. Sullivan announced his support of the nominee this summer before the sexual assault allegation became public. Alaska's Permanent Fund Corporation has a new mandate to increase the amount of the permanent fund that is invested in the state. The fund's board of trustees adopted the new policy yesterday during a meeting in Anchorage. It sets a goal to have at least 5% of the fund invested in-state in 5 years. Permanent Fund CEO Angela Rodell told the board what it would look like in dollars.
By 2023, at least $2.4 billion of the fund, if the fund stays flat, would be invested in-state.
In this case, in-state investments would be handled by an investment manager who isn't employed by the Permanent Fund Corporation. That manager would either need to have an office in Alaska and an Alaska-based employee managing its assets or invest in projects in the state. In addition to the new policy, the board also directed the Permanent Fund Corporation to put $200 million into a program that would use Alaska-based investment managers. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the state's largest celebration of all things geeky.
Bunch of nerds. I fit in. I fit in very well.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Did you know there's no safe amount of alcohol to drink while pregnant? But why should this matter if you're not pregnant or not trying to be? Because nearly half of all pregnancies are unplanned. Many women don't know they're pregnant right away. You could get pregnant and expose your baby to alcohol even before you know you're pregnant. If you're having unprotected sex, don't drink. Learn how FASDs impact everyone, even you, at letstalkfasdak.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority.
A longtime elementary school teacher in Alaska faces charges of sexually abusing students in incidents beginning a decade ago. Lucas Nyswanger is charged with 3 felony counts of sexual abuse of a minor. The 36-year-old had taught 4th grade at Iditarod Elementary School in Wasilla, north of Anchorage, since 2005. Charging documents say Nyswanger told authorities he has been attracted to children for years. Anchorage television station KTUU reports prosecutors said at a court hearing Thursday they believe Nyswanger poses a danger to his own 2 children and asked he be barred from contacting them. Nyswanger appeared telephonically at the hearing from jail. He agreed with prosecutors who said he poses a risk to the community. A Bethel man has been ordered to appear in court for advertising moose meat for sale on Facebook. It's illegal to sell big game meat in Alaska, but sales for subsistence foods are a constant presence on the social media site, and regulations governing the trade of these foods can be inconsistent and confusing. KYUK's Anna Rose MacArthur reports.
If you're looking to buy or sell something in Bethel or the broader Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta, you're likely to land on Bethel Bargains. It's a private Facebook page with more than 16,000 members. A brief glance shows posts selling a television, essential oils, a child's snowsuit, and items in a moving sale. Sprinkled throughout are ads for dry fish and other subsistence foods from around the region. Last week, a post advertising moose meat popped up.
What appeared to be 1 gallon, you know, plastic Ziploc bags. And the ad says, moose meat in ribs, $25 a bag. Text this phone number.
Alaska wildlife trooper Walter Blajewski called the number and spoke with a man named Arnold Loopy. Loopy confirmed that, yes, he had posted the ad, but said that, no, he had not sold any meat. Trooper Blajewski issued Loopy a citation and an order to appear in court. The citation is a minor violation, equivalent to a traffic ticket. If Loopy had sold the meat, he could have received a misdemeanor charge.
Now, obviously, each situation is going to be somewhat different, the scale and size. and scope of that operation will be taken into account.
Trooper Blajewski says that Loopy immediately removed the post. KYUK called Loopy. He said that he hadn't known that Alaska law prohibits the sale of big game meat and that legalities can be confusing with people selling other subsistence foods. So here's a brief overview of some of the regulations. Subsistence game meat cannot be sold in Alaska, except for rabbit or hare meat. Subsistence fish caught in state waters cannot be sold. However, subsistence fish caught in federal waters by rural residents can be sold to non-commercial entities. In the YK Delta, this means that subsistence fish caught within the Yukon Delta National Wildlife Refuge by rural residents is legal to sell. Marine mammal meat can be sold in Alaska Native villages and towns in Alaska or for consumption by Alaska Natives. Migratory bird meat cannot be sold. But bartering for many of these subsistence meats is allowed. The regulations are also different for the non-edible parts of the animals. For instance, some furs, bones, and antlers can be sold. Trooper Blajewski says that other Facebook posts advertising big game meat are under investigation, but he made one thing clear.
I don't monitor Facebook or any of the classified ads for the purpose of, generating criminal cases.
Trooper Blajewski discovered Loopy's post only after a community member walked into his Bethel office and showed it to him. The community member claimed that selling meat is not part of the Yupik culture. Instead, sharing is the culture. But what's also clear is that to have meat to share, a person needs the tools to make subsistence harvest possible, like gas, guns, and ammunition, tools acquired with cash. In Bethel, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
The Army Corps of Engineers has proposed a project to reinforce the Chena River Lakes Flood Control Dam project that protects Fairbanks during high water events. Project manager Julie Anderson says it's aimed at addressing high water erosion that could threaten the earthen Moose Creek Dam.
Back in 2009, after Hurricane Katrina, the Corps of Engineers went through and looked at the risk of all their dams, and Moose Creek Dam was one that they identified that might need some further study because there were some ways that the dam might not respond well if we had extreme water events.
Anderson says a subsequent study looked at ways to prevent water from eroding gravel, sand, and silt in the dam. She says the proposed solution is to cut a channel down the center of the dam and fill it with cement.
Going probably about 10 feet to 15 feet below the foundation and mixing in cement so that it forms a wall.
Anderson says the reinforcement would focus on sections of the dam surrounding the gates used to regulate flow of the Chena River.
It's going to be about 4.5 miles. It starts about where the Burroughs feed booth is, goes to the control works, and then other side of the control works all the way to the north abutment.
The estimated $120 to $150 million project is expected to take 4 years to complete. The proposal is available for public comment through October 19th. Anderson says if approved, 2.5 years of design and work to put a contract package would follow before construction begins. Juneau International Airport is getting nearly $10 million in federal transportation grant money to replace a sand and chemical storage building. The work is expected to address, quote, serious life safety hazards, unquote, that local airport and state officials have flagged in the existing facility. It was built in 1966 as a hangar and later repurposed. Federal Transportation Secretary Elaine Chao announced the new grants, a total of $205 million worth, on Thursday.
And most importantly, these improvements will not only expand airport capacity, but improve safety as well, which, as you all know, is my number one priority.
Chao also touted the grant's economic impact. According to the airport's grant application, the money will also replace an obsolete fueling facility. John McKinnon is the executive director of the Associated General Contractors of Alaska. He couldn't estimate specific economic impacts.
But there's certainly going to be quite a few jobs created for it. A lot of building materials that are coming from outside, but there's concrete and a lot of dirt work associated with it and other things. So, anytime you've got a $10 million project in a community the size of Juneau, it's a big help.
Local airport manager Patty Watto and architect Catherine Fritz were in Washington, D.C. for the announcement and could not be reached for comment. Juneau's airport is one of 37 small airports around the country receiving the supplemental airport infrastructure grants. No other Alaska airports were in the mix today. The State Department of Education will pick Alaska's Teacher of the Year next month, and this week we've been profiling each of the five finalists from all around the state. The final nominee is Danielle Rhea, who teaches 7th and 8th grade at the Alaska Native Cultural Charter School in Anchorage. Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early has more on Rhea's transition from working in rural Alaska to helping open the school.
After getting a degree in physical therapy in her native Texas, Danielle Rhea thought she'd only be in Alaska for a short time. She was working in Dutch Harbor for a summer on a fishing vessel to save up money to go to graduate school.
And while I was playing ball with some kids in the rec center, the superintendent asked me if I wanted to substitute teach, and I told him, no way. I am not teacher material. You don't want me in your school. And he said, well, I'll pay you $120 a day. And I said, cha-ching, okay, let me do that.
She was wrong about not being teacher material.
Everybody at the school in Alaska was like, you're a natural, you should become a teacher. And of course, I fell in love with Alaska. And I went to Anchorage, got my degree, and then went and taught in Togiak and Oostyoheok.
Rhea admits that her introduction to rural Alaska was a little rocky.
I'm not going to lie to you. My first year in Togiak was a really tough year. I was spat at. People threw rocks at me. People said, go home, Gusuk. It was tough. I was not welcome. Parents wouldn't come to teacher conferences. Parents wouldn't shake my hand because I was white. But that was my first year. My second year, people were at the airport, which is just a runway, basically. There's no real airport. And they were waiting for me to get off the plane because they were so happy I was back.
Rhea says many outside teachers only stay in rural communities for a year or less. Her determination to continue to teach won over the village. The strong relationship Rhea had with rural Alaska and Alaska Native children is largely what led her to help establish the Alaska Native Cultural Charter School in Anchorage. Rhea had spent years developing curriculum in rural Alaska that helped keep the kids engaged by connecting lesson plans to Native customs.
So the kids weren't connecting to the basal readers, they didn't understand the curriculum, and they weren't learning. They were checked out. So I had, in order to teach the elements of literature, I had elders come in and tell oral traditional stories, and I taught what a protagonist is, what an antagonist is. I taught everything through those stories. And then I worked with some elders also on math and science and subsistence things, and like, why did they design boats differently?
The Department of Education described Rhea's dedication to helping build the charter school from the ground up as the main reason she was nominated for Teacher of the Year. These days, Rhea spends her time teaching 7th and 8th grade language arts, social studies, science, and math. She says she's happy she's made lasting relationships with her students.
And they all come to my school, and they all volunteer, and they all tell my kids to listen to me and to participate. And so my kids see these older kids come back, like all the time. And they're just like, wow, I'm going to be like them.
Rhea says she's proud she's been able to help mold students into passionate community members who aren't afraid to voice their perspectives. In Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight, from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. And by Matson, committed to the communities it serves, building on more than 50 years of service to the communities of Alaska. Learn more at Matson.com.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, nerd alert. And trust me, I mean that in the best way. So you may have heard of Comic-Con, but in Alaska, we have CentureCon. And last weekend, thousands of people poured into Anchorage's Dena'ina Center for its 13th annual festival. It's Alaska's largest celebration of geek culture, everything from Japanese animation and gaming to science fiction and comic books. Alaska Public Media's Ammon Swenson dove in headfirst.
At CentureCon, fandom runs deep.
It's the last day of the convention, and Justine Fellin just got her first tattoo.
I was like, oh, I don't know if I could do this, but I did it. My friends were supporting me, and it's my first anime I really, really connected with, so I was just like, I'm gonna do this one.
Her tattoo, still fresh and covered in plastic wrap, is a symbol from the anime Fairy Tales.
There's a lot of people who don't feel like they're part of anything in that show, and like they finally find people who care about them, and that's how I feel about SenshiCon. Like, I'm a volunteer with the people here. I feel like I'm very connected with them. They're very open and accepting of who you are.
SenshiCon is similar to other conventions: vendor booths, workshops, special guests. But these attendees are rabid fans of video games, sci-fi, and comic books. Most are dressed like superheroes or anime characters, something referred to as cosplay. The vendors sell offerings like steampunk jewelry and crochet Pokemon, even musical instruments. Laura Sexhour is selling movie and video game-themed ocarinas.
The instrument itself is thousands of years old, but it's popular in the modern age because of The Legend of Zelda: Ocarina of Time.
One floor up, Bernadette Tix is teaching a class on sword fighting techniques. She's in full medieval garb, roaming between pairs of students facing off against each other with wooden training swords.
For the third one, the attacker is going to strike me in the head.
She's here promoting Scola St. George.
So we are set up like a school of martial arts or a dojo. We have a specific curriculum that's been developed based off of medieval fighting treatises, specifically off of the master Fiore de Liberi.
Don't worry, I didn't know who that was either.
Fiore de Liberi was an Italian master of defense from the early 1400s.
The genres and interests at SenshiCon might be eclectic, but Tix says it makes sense.
I think a lot of people get into medieval reenactment, medieval fighting, originally through a love of fantasy, right? A love of fantasy can inspire a love of real history as well. And a love of fantasy can also lead to a love of other forms of fiction. You know, I'm a huge Tolkien nerd, so fantasy, sci-fi, I'm an anime fan myself. I think people who often have those interests, our hope is, some of them are going to have an overlap with this.
Down the hall, there's a room where attendees can give their costumes a tune-up. This cosplayer's hair is getting a lift with ample hairspray. Cosplay is basically putting together a costume and spending the day as your favorite fictional character. It's a big part of the SenshiCon experience.
I'm cosplaying as Barry Blue Jeans from the podcast The Adventure Zone.
I'm playing as Izuku Midoriya from My Hero Academia.
I am cosplaying as a Pokemon Go trainer from the phone app Pokemon Go.
A Viking.
This one in particular is my first time with this costume people.
Veronica Pearson is roaming the convention with a medical kit. She's not in costume, but part of emergency medical services. She's worked other events at the Denina Center, but not like this.
The costumes are phenomenal. The people are amazing. A lot of them really get into their role playing, and it's kind of exciting to see. I don't think I could do it, but I like looking.
She might not have a clue about what's going on, but she appreciates the lighthearted enthusiasm of the convention.
There seems to be an atmosphere that is just fun. Can we just have some fun? And I appreciate that in a stressful world.
Fun. That's why one attendee, who goes by Kane, spent his weekend at SenshiCon. He was one of the first through the doors on Friday. He's cosplaying as Link from The Legend of Zelda video games.
I have been here since day one, and all I have to say is it was amazing.
Kane spent the weekend wandering the convention, meeting people, and checking out the attractions. He even bought himself a new ocarina to go with his costume.
I gave my old ocarina to another Link who didn't have one. No Link is complete without an ocarina.
It's that kind of instant connection with each other that attendees find so appealing about SenshiCon. It's a judgment-free zone and a chance to wear your interest on your sleeve, literally. For Kane, though, it's even simpler.
Bunch of nerds. I fit in. I fit in very well.
For AK, I'm Ammon Swenson.
Now it's time for 49 Voices, and this week we're going back in time. 47 years ago, Janice Stoner became the first female surveyor in the state. Today, she lives in San Francisco, but during her time in Alaska, she helped make history.
Women's lib was entering into my thinking, and it was starting to be in the air. And when I told my parents I was going to go to Alaska, they said, well, what are you going to do there? And I said, well, I'm going to get a job. And my dad said, what can you do besides be a prostitute? If you want to see Alaska and you want to make money, you become a surveyor. But no women were being hired to be surveyors. No, because you were out in tent camps. I created this application, and on it, it says, other jobs you will consider. I just clicked the box, surveyor. In August, they sent me a letter, and they said, report for duty on such and such date in Anchorage. Come prepared to leave for work. I was 30 miles from the nearest town. I hadn't seen another white woman in 6 weeks. I had been stuck with these guys for all these months. It wasn't like I could just go home and talk to my girlfriends. I was there with these dudes. That's all I was, where I was. You shouldn't be here. You can't do this job. Why do you think you're here? And they were just screaming at me. And I'm screaming back. I'm answering them back. What do you mean I don't need a job? Why does your friend need a job better than me? I got to be a women's liber first in that regard. And I didn't take that lightly. I considered that a very big responsibility that I had to help other women get into the field. If I blew it, nobody else ever got to get in.
That was Janice Stoner, Alaska's first female surveyor. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Ammon Swenson, Wesley Early, and Jared Sport. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
And finally tonight, a correction. A report that aired yesterday on Mount Polly mine engineers facing disciplinary proceedings incorrectly stated that the Canadian mine had discharged mine waste into a transboundary watershed. The 2014 dam break discharged tailings into the Fraser River watershed, which, though not a cross-border system, supports salmon populations that are valuable to commercial Alaska fishermen. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at AK Public News. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Rasha McChesney in Juneau, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Abby Collins in Anchorage, Jeremy Shea in Juneau, and Anna Rose MacArthur in Bethel. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, Wesley Early is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Raven Alaska. Raven serves Alaskans in over 115 communities across the state from Valdez, Utqiagvik, and more. Information at flyraven.com. Starting October 1st, all of Alaska will be protected from the harmful effects of secondhand smoke because all public places across the state will be smoke-free. Everyone can now breathe easier as they work and play. Smoke-free workplaces and public spaces protects the health of all Alaskans. It also protects our youth from ever starting smoking. So if you do smoke or vape, please take it outside. For more information about the new smoke-free workplace law, visit smokefree.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Department of Health and Social Services. The Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium featured open positions include CMAs and LPNs for their primary care clinics in Southeast Alaska. Come work for Search and contribute to your community. Enjoy full benefits, paid time off, and retirement savings. Search is looking for someone like you. For more information, visit search.org/jobs. That's search.org/jobs to apply. This message sponsored by the Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium. This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.